Welcome to the One and O podcast, hosted by Joe Cook and Brad Kellner. The One and O podcast is part of the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast channel. And today, if you are on your way to Austin or just passing some time on your weekend before the game gets going, we're going to offer you a preview of what to expect when Texas takes on Louisiana in a matchup between two ranked teams during the season opener. Make sure you listen to our podcast and the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast. Be sure to rate, subscribe, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, check out our sponsors.
Audiovisual consultations. Give them a call, 512-255-8678, to get your home TV set up, spruced up. Yeah, opening weekend is already here, but you can still make the call to AV Consultations. Make sure your home is the place to be for friends and family all season long. And the One to Know podcast is also brought to you by Altstadt Brewery, Altstadt Beer. It is German beer made here and the best beer that you can find all across the state of Texas. For your tailgates, for your watch parties, make sure you accompany your football season with Altstadt beer. No impurities, no regrets.
So as we record this on Friday the 3rd, about 25 or 26 hours away from kickoff, Brad, I'm curious, did you get to watch much of the season, the real good season openers last night with Minnesota and Ohio State or UCF Boise State? You get to take in anything last night?
Well, you didn't like week zero. You didn't like watching Nebraska lose again as a favorite. I thought that was a hell of a time last weekend.
I was at, of all places in the world to be, I was at the Clevelander in Miami.
Oh, wow.
I don't do these types of things often, but there was some adult beverages in front of me at that time.
Oh man. Yeah. I watched that. I watched the games last night too. Man, that Ohio State Minnesota game was hella entertaining. Minnesota obviously put up a hell of a fight last night. Hate that Ibrahim, their stud running back, got hurt. Kind of felt like the game was over once he left in the third quarter with that leg injury. Hopefully not too serious there, but that was entertaining. And then, yeah, the Boise State UCF game, the Gus Bus is off and running at Central Florida. Boise State was up 21-0. It looked like they were going to walk away with a nice quality road victory, but UCF with a strong second half comeback. So it was fun, man. Ton of games last night. We've got games tonight and obviously a big slate of games tomorrow. College football is back and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and at least as far as this podcast is concerned, none more important than the one on Fox at 3:30 when Texas takes on Louisiana. And to start talking about that game, we won't talk about Louisiana quite yet. We're going to keep it in-house and talk about Texas. And while I was at that famous hotel last week, the news started to leak out, and Inside Texas was able to confirm that Steve Sarkisian informed Hudson Card he would be the starting quarterback for their game against Louisiana 1 week later. He ended up confirming that at his Monday press conference, but he also added a few other tidbits that probably concerned some fans, because like that old adage says, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one, when he said that Casey Thompson was going to play. Now, throughout the course of the week, he was very vague in what that snap volume was. He was able to qualify it. I don't want to say hide behind qualifiers, but that's what it was. Hid behind qualifiers about how it would fit into the flow of the game. And, you know, the exact amount wasn't, you know, you're going to get two series or something like that, or, you know, you're going to get this quarter. But he acknowledged that even with Card as the starter, the player who won the quarterback battle, and I'll add some more details on that later, even as the player who won the quarterback battle, Casey Thompson's still going to get some opportunities. So, Brad, I think that phrase I brought up was one line that you bring up over and over again. What are your thoughts on, A, I guess Hudson winning the job over Casey Thompson, and then B, still splitting some snaps and making it sound like this competition may still kind of be ongoing?
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it wasn't the most supreme vote of confidence from Steve Sarkisian. And I didn't love the way he handled the press conference on Monday. And I don't really love the way he's going to handle this quarterback position tomorrow against Louisiana. But good for Hudson Card, man. We talked about this a lot last week, as you mentioned. You know, it felt like over the course of fall camp, he had done more than Casey Thompson. And he took bigger strides over the course of the summer and into fall camp. And he made the decision a little bit easier for Steve Sarkisian there. So I didn't think it was going to happen. Throughout the offseason, I thought Casey Thompson was going to be the guy to get the ball first against Louisiana on September 4th. But Hudson Carr did some really good things. He did a better job of protecting the ball, which, look, every coach wants their quarterback to not turn the football over, right? That's football 101 right there. But when your running game is as good as Texas's is, like, that's the focal point of this offense. That's going to be the identity of this team. Bijan Robinson's your best player. Like, you want your running game to be your staple, and you just want your offense, you just want your passing game, obviously, to be good, but not to be bad, not to make mistakes that shoot yourselves in the foot and take away from what your running game can provide. So Hudson Card apparently throughout camp did a better job of protecting the football. He got the start in the second scrimmage. He's been getting the vast majority of reps with the ones over the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, I'm glad Sark let us know. I'm glad we all found out before the first series tomorrow. But, yeah, once again, I don't love the idea of going into the game planning for two guys to play. Now, I don't think this is a, well, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none type of situation, Joe. Like, that's the old cliche. Like, I feel like both of these guys are good enough to help Texas win some football games this year. I really do. But it's just, you know, what's it going to look like tomorrow? Like, if Hudson Card looks really good and Texas scores touchdowns on its first two possessions, does Casey Thompson play? Like, why would Casey Thompson play in that situation? Or what if it's the other way around? Like, Hudson Card struggles early and then Casey Thompson looks good. Like, do you go back to Hudson Card? Like, what is that going to look like? So, yeah, I don't love the idea of going into a game saying that both guys are going to play. Like, in my mind, all offseason long, Joe, whoever won this job, I figured the plan was for that guy to start all season. Like, hopefully he's so good that he just doesn't relinquish the job at any point, and he's just your guy. I don't love expecting two quarterbacks to play.
Yeah, I know what you mean there. And this is from a head coach who has said over and over and over, basically whenever he's asked, that quarterback's the most important position in sports. I do like what you bring up, that this is a far different scenario than, I guess, what would it be, 2016, when it was Tyrone Swoops versus Shane Buechele, where it was true freshman or guy who was really unproven. I mean, these are two, like you mentioned, quality options, guys that you can win games with. So it's not a dire situation. Both can probably play well. And as we probably know, both played well throughout the course of that preseason camp, but Hudson Card ended up taking it. I'm with you. I thought that he would name a starter and just kind of roll with it and say, look, this is our guy. This is the guy right behind him. And this is, you know, I reserve the right to evaluate, but, you know, ending the quote there, if you're going to name a starter, you got to have confidence in him. You can't go back and forth willy-nilly, you know, just making those changes. I don't think that's going to happen. I bet we have an idea I think whenever the snaps that Casey Thompson gets occurs, it's going to be something like, okay, this seems like the right time to try it out. Hopefully it's because Texas may have a comfortable lead and, you know, they want to give one little wrinkle into the game, get them those opportunities, and not because it's, oh, well, Hudson Card just threw an interception and somebody else fumbled. So we got to try and spruce it up and get some juice going. I think it's going to be a better situation than that with the snaps they get. But the other thing that we didn't really mention, and it's going to overhang every single quarterback battle basically around the country for until college football ends, is the portal. Is that you have to, yes, you really do want the best players to play. And I think that's what's happening here, but you don't want to go into a season with a redshirt freshman, a true freshman in Charles Wright, and a true freshman walk-on in Cole Lord, and another walk-on with, you know, very limited experience in Ben Ballard. That's not a tenable situation for someone, like we mentioned, who said that this is the most important position in sports. So, you know, you understand why it's happening. Is it the perfect situation for Texas at quarterback right now? It's a great situation, but it's by no means perfect. And I think what Sark's trying to do is make the most out of it with what he has. And I think you can always circle back to that point that you said, is that you can still win games with both these guys. It's not a dire situation.
Yeah, and generally Texas has needed more than one quarterback to get through a 12-game season, right? Whether it's injuries, whether it's transfers, whether it's inconsistency, odds are Casey Thompson is going to have to play at some point this season. And yeah, I think that's well said. We talked about it throughout the course of the offseason on this podcast. The transfer portal plays a huge part in this thing. Like, even if Hudson Card was clearly the better guy in the spring, which I don't think he was, Steve Sarkisian still wouldn't have announced Hudson Card as the starter for fear of Casey Thompson entering the portal and leaving. Because then, like you said, you're one play away from a true freshman having to take big snaps in a Power 5 conference. That is a scary situation. So, yeah, I'm sure that's part of it. I'm sure that's why Sark made the announcement the way he did on Monday. And, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I'm with you. Like, the only time – I would have said this if Casey Thompson won the job. I would have said this about Hudson Card. The only time I want to see the backup is if – Texas is winning a game in the fourth quarter and it's mop-up duty, right? It's a blowout. You feel like the game's in hand. You can give the other guys some reps just to get him some playing time on a Saturday. Like, that's what I was hoping to see. So I hope Hudson Card goes out and plays so well in the first quarter on Saturday that we don't see Casey Thompson at all. Like, to me, that is the best case scenario for this football team. Like, I would love to leave tomorrow, Joe, sitting here thinking, oh my God, Sark got this right. This is Hudson Card's team. There's no question about that. And, oh, my God, we've got two, maybe 3 years, maybe 4 years of this guy as the starting quarterback here at Texas. That's awesome. Now, I guess you don't want to put too much stock into one game, but my point is the best case scenario for Texas is leaving tomorrow's game, number one, with a dub, and number two, not having questions about who's going to start against Arkansas next weekend.
Yeah, imagine if I don't think this is going to happen because I respect what Louisiana does this year, and we'll get into that, or what I think they'll be able to do, and we'll get into that later. But just imagine they're up, you know, 30 heading into the tail end of the third quarter, which would be amazing. And then in comes Casey Thompson, and then Sark can kind of smile at the end of the game and say, told you both we're going to play. I don't think he would have designed it that way or thought it would occur that way, but he'd be feeling pretty good about himself getting his first win as a head coach at Texas and nailing basically everything that he predicted a week earlier, if that were to happen. I think we kind of hit everything as best we could on that one. And I just looking at even the depth chart, you know, one thing that I noticed was, and I think Sark's words kind of indicated that would be the case, there's no or on that depth chart. This isn't, he's our starter, but we're going to get this guy's snaps. Like, it's a clear pecking order. Casey's going to get snaps, obviously, because they believe in him. But QB1 is number one. There's just some small qualifiers on it.
Yeah.
With that, you want to kind of go through the rest of the depth chart that we saw on offense first with what the school released on Monday afternoon?
Yeah, sure. What stood out to you? Any surprises? I mean, I think we knew, you know, which guys were starting at most positions on that side of the football, especially after we found out about Hudson Card at quarterback. But any standouts in a good way or a bad way on offense?
Not particularly. I think there's some positive things to take away. There's only one or on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
And that's at tight end. Cade Brewer is listed as number one, and Jared Wiley splits an oar with true freshman Gunnar Helm, who I think is going to do some good things, maybe not in this first game, but this upcoming season. I think what we saw from him in the spring, him enrolling early, him working in the fall and preseason, enrolling early is always big, and I think we may see a good amount of him in this upcoming game. Kind of some – you know, just some small things. I think with Tom Herman's depth chart, they would put positions for like their wide receiver specifically. And that doesn't exist. It's just wide receiver. And those starting wide receivers are Josh Moore, Jordan Whittington, and Xavier Worthy. I think everybody could admit it's a good threesome at the top of the wide receiver chart, even if it is relying on someone who's often injured or a true freshman and a skinny true freshman at that with Xavier Worthy. But wide receiver, I like the way it looks right now, especially with those top three. But after that, it starts getting dicey. And that's, you know, we've repeated this over and over and over again. The top flight for Texas, basically at every position, looks pretty good. There's a few that may be elite, like running back, but there and a few that may have some issues, like wide receiver, but for the most part, the top flight is pretty good all around. But once you start diving in deeper at wide receiver, I mean, Troy O'Mary's on the depth chart. He's not going to play this week. Kelvonte Dixon, second on the depth chart. He's been working through ankle injuries. Mm-hmm. Alvante Woodard, we don't know anything about what he looks like. Kai Money, for as great an effort he gives and as much as he's ascended the depth chart from a walk-on, still is the lightning rod for people's wide receivers' dissatisfaction, and which is unfortunate. And Marcus Washington, we don't know much about. He's a guy who we hear about focus, and that kind of ties in with drops. So I'm really curious what we're going to see from that wide receiver group. We know that rotation that Tom Herman had basically throughout his career at wide receiver never really helped them. But I'm really curious to see what they look like. This is the position that's had the most questions about them going into this offseason. Those top flight guys seem like they can answer them, but I want to see it happen.
Yeah, you're more confident in the starting wide receivers than I am. I have the same questions as you do in regards to the depth in that wide receiver room. I think every Texas fan does. But yeah, I mean, relying on Xavier Worthy, a true freshman who weighs like 165 pounds soaking wet, that scares me. That guy's never played at this level. Jordan Whittington, I don't have to tell you all about the injury history that guy has had. I mean, he's a five-star. Obviously, it feels like the potential is there. And the idea of him in a Steve Sarkisian offense excites the hell out of me. There's no question about that. But, like, we haven't seen enough consistency from Jordan Whittington to feel really good about this guy being there. Then Joshua Moore, you know, he was good last year, the team's leading receiver in yards and touchdowns. He did a lot of good things for this team. But he's obviously battled injuries during his career and in this offseason. And, you know, he's shown at times the inability to get off bump and run coverage. Like that's my big concern. Exactly. Like we saw that with every Texas receiver last year, whether they're here or gone, guys couldn't get off of jam coverage. And you have the same wide receivers coach in Andre Coleman, which I disagree with. And I hope he proves me wrong that he's the man for the job. But like, I haven't seen it from these receivers yet. So until I see it, I'm going to be a little skeptical. Now, I feel better, once again, about these guys in a Steve Sarkisian offense than I would in a Tom Herman offense, because Sark does such a good job of scheming guys open. But, man, Jordan Whittington's talked about this. Like, Sark's offense puts you in one-on-ones, which is great. Like, that's – if you're an athlete at the University of Texas, you should be chomping at the bit for the opportunity to be one-on-one with anybody, especially against somebody from Louisiana, which is a guy hypothetically who has less talent than you. Like, that should be a win more often than not. But – on one-on-ones last year, even against on paper inferior talent, the Texas wide receivers couldn't win those matchups and they couldn't get open. So, man, obviously the potential is there with these guys. You've got 4 and 5 stars at the starting spots, but man, I am concerned with that position. The running game obviously eases some of those concerns, but look, you have to have a semblance of a passing game to beat good teams in this sport. And if you want to win the Big 12 championship, you sure as hell have to have good receiver play. Texas didn't have that enough last year, and I'm a little bit nervous on that front. Then I'll follow up with the tight ends too. Like I'd feel a little bit better at receiver, Joe, if there was a difference maker at tight end, and there's not one there. And I think the biggest surprise for the depth chart from an offensive standpoint was not seeing Jatavion Sanders on there. Maybe it was a pipe dream for me. Like I knew I was in over my skis a little bit with like wanting and almost expecting JT to make an impact early on, like considering he wasn't in for spring. Obviously, if he was in for spring, then I think everybody would have similar expectations, but not an early enrollee, a guy who's learning a new position. Like he played offense in Denton, but he was more of a receiver than a tight end. So obviously he has to figure out how to block at this level. But I was like a little surprised and disappointed that he wasn't on the depth chart, because I want that guy to be a part of this passing game. And I feel like he can be an impact player as a pass catcher relatively early. And I assume, Joe, I could be wrong on this, but because he's not even in the top three at tight end on this depth chart, that we're probably not going to see him at all this weekend.
Yeah, that you mentioned it. Not enrolling early was big for him. The first day that these coaches got to work with Jatavion Sanders in pads was the first day of preseason camp. Yeah. So there's a lot for him to learn blocking wise and kind of being in a new area. He played just plain split end wide receiver when he was at Denton Ryan. And he basically was just a plain wide receiver. He wasn't 6'3 or 6'4, 250 pounds like he is right now. So that it makes sense. He's going to be someone that you want to see more of as the season goes on. But you're right. I think that position right now, it's got good base level, but there may not be any elite difference makers. But I am there's one position that I'm going to throw a number out at you. It okay. is 76. What do you think that number is? Looking at the offensive depth chart.
76. Is that Hayden Connor? Is he 76?
It is Hayden Connor, but in this context, it's the amount of combined starts for this Texas starting offensive line. And that includes two super seniors, one a six-year senior and left guard at Denzel Okafor, one a fifth-year senior at right tackle and Derek Kerstetter. But that's the amount of starts that this starting offensive line has. Everyone but Jake Majors has double-digit starts on the offensive line, and we saw how he did last year. And we see now that he's listed at least at 6'3", 310. So he's even bulked up a little bit. So I think this offensive line went against probably the best unit on the defense constantly during camp in that defensive line. And yeah, they got topped probably a little bit more often than they wanted to, but they held their own enough to where I think that you can be confident that this may not be a Joe Moore Award winner or anything great. But I've got confidence in Christian Jones. I've got confidence in the competency of those seniors like Okafor and Kerstetter. I've always been big junior Ongulau fan. And I also like the depth behind them. Obviously, each position has guys behind him. But with offensive line, you look for a top group and you mix and match from there. And I think Andre Karich, Tope Amade, and Hayden Connor, maybe even Isaiah Hookfin make up that top eight and top nine. And for a freshman quarterback with a star running back, I think that's a – I mean, of course, it's not what Kyle Flood and Steve Sarkisian had at Alabama. Right. But all things considered, I think that's a pretty good group to be working with. And it's a group that at least the coaches believe is going to improve as the year goes along.
Yeah, two things I'm really glad you brought up there. The first one is practice. I know Allen Iverson might not be too fond of that one. There's your low-hanging fruit sports radio / podcast joke right there. But you're right. I mean, this Texas defensive line is legit. It's a top 15, top 20 defensive line in college football. Like, I think on the schedule for the Longhorns this year, Oklahoma is the only team that has a better defensive line than Texas. So the offensive line has gotten the opportunity to get battle-tested during practice, and hopefully that has helped develop these guys and get ready for the regular season. And then you brought up Kyle Flood too. I mean, yeah, I'm excited about the players. You mentioned the experience and some of the depth up front for UT, but the biggest change and the biggest addition and the biggest reason for excitement for that group this year is Kyle Flood. Herb Hand was terrible. He was solid in year one, but the last couple of years were disastrous for Texas on the offensive line in terms of recruiting and obviously in terms of the on-field product too. So Kyle Flood is proven. He's been a head coach at this level. Obviously you saw what he did at Alabama the last couple of years. He's got a proven track record of building and developing offensive line talent over the course of his coaching career. Like, that guy, you know, is going to be good here. The question is, was he able to develop enough in the course of one off season to where this offensive line group feels like a strength? Like, last year they were a weakness. I don't think they're going to be a weakness this year, but like, can they actually be a strength to where it's like, oh damn, this is one of the better offensive line groups in the country? That would obviously be huge. I'm not sure if it's feasible to expect that in year one, but over time, man, I think Kyle Flood's going to pay tremendous dividends with this offensive line. So yeah, really, really excited that he's here. Hoping we will see this offensive line unit pick up a couple of twists and stunts for the first time in seemingly a couple of years. But yeah, those two things, man, they really, really excite me. And another thing that excites me is, look, the spring game, like, the quarterbacks were kind of running for their lives. I didn't love that, especially Hudson Card working with the twos, but the run blocking was really good in that spring game. And you have to assume over the last 5 months or 4 months, whatever it is, that they've gotten even better in that regard. And once again, that's the identity of your offense. So if your run blocking is good, that's going to make life a hell of a lot easier for everybody, especially your first year starter at quarterback.
Exactly. And we didn't even talk about running back, which I think we both admit is going to be strong. This is where this team's strength is, probably the best position on offense, and the best player on the team is there as well with Bijan Robinson. So it's going to be a run-first team. You may have seen me on Inside Texas. I stole your line. I always do it. Steve Sarkisian did too. This is going to be a game decided in the trenches, and they're going with 76, you know, combined starts and Bijan Robinson back there bodes well, at least to me, that this is a, you know, a solid offensive group. It may not be spectacular, but I think it'll be solid and can still put together some of those highlight plays we saw so often under Sarkisian. What about on defense? I'm trying to think the what caught my eye over there. And the only thing I think what we need to start off with is, yeah, we talked about the defensive line and there's plenty to go there, but look at that defensive secondary, starting at corner, a senior, starting at safety, a senior, starting at safety, a senior, starting at corner, a senior, and starting at nickel, a senior. And that may not have a huge impact in this game in particular, because what Billy Napier and Louisiana liked to do was similar to what Tom Herman liked to do offensively. But going forward in the Big 12, that's something I really am glad to see. And even like the primary backups at one of those safety positions, it's Chris Adamora, or two safety positions, it's Chris Adamora. The youngest guy kind of who's a factor in the entire secondary is Jaron Thompson, who had an interception and played well at the end of the last year. So the thing that caught my eye, at least with regards to the defensive depth chart, is that's an experienced secondary. And we've seen this movie before with Manny Diaz and Vance Bedford and Todd Orlando, where they walk into a situation where they've got an experienced secondary and a lot of guys who could, you know, play football for money, get direct paychecks for it instead of indirect paychecks for their name, image, and likeness. But I like seeing that on the depth chart, and I like where all those guys are positioned as well.
Hey, it's year one for a Texas defensive coordinator, right? There's reason to be optimistic. Now, last year didn't work out so well for Chris Ash in his first year in Austin, but I'll chalk that one up more to COVID and not having spring ball and not having an off season and just all of the other stuff surrounding the Texas football program for why things didn't continue in that direction. But all of those DCs that you mentioned, yeah, they were really good in year one. Things obviously fell apart over time, and hopefully that trend can change under Pete Kwiatkowski. But no, you're right, Joe. A lot of experience, not enough consistency. So I've got some questions. I'm still in a little bit of wait and see mode with some of those DBs, but man, it's hard to ask for much more as a first-year defensive coordinator, right, than having all of those seniors and all of that experience on the back end. Obviously, wonder what Anthony Cook's going to be. You know, former high four-star, really highly touted player. He's shown some signs, but to say his career at Texas has been inconsistent would be the understatement of the century. Like, is he good enough to be a consistent nickel, or is that a position where – during or right after the first game, we're having discussions about, do we need to put Adamora there? Do we need to put Jaron Thompson there? What do we do? Also at safety with Brendan Schooler. Yeah, you mentioned the experience, but you know, only one of those years in college is playing safety. And he was good as a freshman at Oregon, put up really good numbers, looked comfortable. That was 5 years ago. And He's been playing wide receiver the last few years. So like, how good is he? Can we expect him to be a solid player back there? Because PK's defense, how does that look for this football team? So once again, experience is ideal. It's a better situation than most. And PK was able to make magic with lesser talent and lesser experience during his time at UW. So obviously that excites the hell out of me, just having that guy work with the talent that should be here at Texas. But man, I want to be DBU again, Joe. And I've been hurt many times over the last decade and a half. And every time I feel like I buy in, something bad happens back there. So I'm gonna need to wait and see. Now, the good news is, some other good news, like Levi Lewis is a good player, the quarterback for Louisiana. He's not
good. He's a bus driver.
Yeah, he's not good enough to beat you with his arm. Like, he's not a high-level thrower. His arm talent isn't anywhere close to elite. So, like, the strength of Louisiana is running the football and playing off the play action. But, like, this is a decent test. And Arkansas's passing game next week is not that great. And Rice, obviously, in week three, like I assume their passing game is not that great because it's never that great. So, like, you kind of get a little bit of an easing in terms of quarterbacks, which I think mm-hmm. could help the secondary gain some confidence as they get into Big 12 play.
Yeah, I'm with you. And even, I think, what, the first conference game, isn't it Tyler Shook with Texas Tech? So you're not hitting, you know, the big quarterbacks, at least as you're starting the season off, and then until you get to, what, TCU and OU and Oklahoma State. Those are the three that you got to look out for. Of course, Purdy later in the year. But, yeah, you're not starting off with some superstar quarterback like you did with LSU and Joe Burrow a couple of years ago. And we didn't know he was a superstar, but he was at that time. Definitely easing into it. This is going to be a test of just knowing your assignment. They're going against a crew that doesn't make very many mistakes. So in turn, Texas can't make many mistakes. You can be way more athletic than everybody lining up across from you. But if you're in the wrong spot and they're in the right spot, doesn't matter what your speed is. You got to play catch up from behind. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to look around the rest of the linebacker looks are kind of interesting. I'm not sure if a lot of people expected Luke Brockermeyer to end up being the starter at one of those linebacker spots, but he had a heck of a camp. He was often causing turnovers, and he's going to be paired with DeMarvian Overshown. I think David Benda, who's listed as that backup, will kind of is a backup for both spots. He's someone who also had a pretty good spring and fall and is someone that the coaches trust, plays quickly. And then Sam, that extra linebacker spot, if they go into more of a base look, it's got some experience there with Ovi of Gofu and Ben Davis, two playoff transfers that they really value. Seeing this is value for the culture of this team, but linebacker, it's kind of like wide receiver. There's some good pieces at the top. There's some really good players at the top, but not to say that there's not good depth behind them. It's just more guys we haven't seen excel in a Longhorn uniform, or we kind of know what they are. So, but luckily for them, they're going to be sandwiched by another really strong unit, and that's that defensive line. I think that whatever Keandre Coburn and Moro Ojomo do this year, it's just going to have so many benefits. Like when Puna Ford was messing up defensive interiors in 2017, like those two are going to make the whole opposing offense kind of have to manage, you know, what they do, I think, pretty much every game this year.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, that's the strength of this defense, right? There's no doubt about it. This defensive line is absolutely loaded, especially up the middle. So the hope is those guys can wreak havoc, like you said, and make life easier for the guys in the back seven. I guess the weirdest thing, and you alluded to this, the weirdest part of this entire depth chart is that there are 12 starting positions on defense. Like, they just – and look, we expect multiplicity. We expect versatility. We expect a bunch of different looks from Pete Kwiatkowski. So I guess this depth chart is kind of showing us that, yeah, you're going to see a lot of changes and a lot of personnel packages on that side of the football. I don't know if I had seen that before, though, where they actually had 12 different positions listed on either side of the ball. Yeah, linebacker, I think most Texas fans are in wait-and-see mode. Look, DeMarvian Overshown's a stud. We feel good about him. As long as he stays healthy, that guy is going to be an impact player, maybe the most impactful player in the back seven for this Texas defense. But yeah, I'll be honest, seeing Luke Brockermeyer as a starter does scare me. Like I'm scared when I see walk-ons in there. Now I know there are a ton of success stories at Texas and all throughout college football of guys who started their careers as walk-ons and turned out to be fantastic college players. So maybe that's Luke Brockermeyer. And we know about his family. We know what his dad was. We know what his brothers are. Like that's okay. You can bet on the bloodlines and maybe be confident there, but we're still talking about a walk-on, so I'm a little bit nervous seeing that guy perhaps expected to play a big role in this defense this year. And yeah, the transfers, Joe, that's a big question. I kind of want to ask you, look, I've read a lot of your work at Inside Texas, so I kind of know some of your thoughts here, but for our listeners who are idiots and aren't subscribed to Inside Texas, that felt mean, but you should subscribe to Inside Texas to get all your UT content throughout the year. Tell us about the transfers, man. I mean, what are you hearing about Agofu, about Ben Davis, about Ray Thornton, Devin Richardson? Like, all of these guys are obviously on the depth chart, and I know Texas fans were excited when all of those guys decided to transfer to UT, but, like, is it reasonable to expect them to to be significant parts of this defense this year.
I think definitely so with Ray Thornton. I mean, it's kind of interesting how these guys were able to pair bringing in players from championship programs with also bringing in players at positions of major need. All those guys, basically with the exception of Devin Richardson, who went to New Mexico State, those are from playoff teams. Those are guys who have been part of cultures to where the expectation is we got to win it. We're not just settling for 9 wins. We're settling for, you know, 13, 14 wins. And not to say that that's something that's going to happen this year, but those guys understand what it takes to win and how difficult it is to go out and top opponents. So, and Steve Sarkisian has mentioned that throughout the course of, you know, his media availabilities, that those guys bring in a way to elevate a championship culture, because, you know, we've all had coaches before. They can only do so much. They can only say so much, and sometimes they get tuned out. But when it's someone right there with you who's telling you, like, look, I've been there. Like, rely on this experience I had 2 years ago or last year or anything like that, and believe me when I say this, I think that's really, really valuable. As far as on the field, Ray Thornton, he came here to be a starter. He kind of was a do-it-all guy at LSU for that linebacker core. But there is a need for edge rushers once Joseph Osai left. And Ray Thornton is probably going to end up filling that role on that buck weak side edge position. Ovi Ogofu is someone who's I don't think he has the exact same talent as Ray Thornton, but he's going to be able to play both the weak side and maybe some of the strong side. Ben Davis, he's someone who is trying to find a home at a position. I think Alabama, amidst all the injuries, was trying to figure out where to put it. I mean, he was a inside linebacker recruit kind of based off his athleticism and playing for a small time Alabama school. And I think he got to Alabama and just, you know, couldn't stay healthy and just couldn't become developed at the position. So they've put him on the outside. And I think that's where you're going to see him. Remember, he was nursing an injury, I believe, at the beginning of camp. So I'm curious how much he's going to play. Steve Sarkisian didn't mention him in his injury report, so he should be good to go. But those transfers, they brought in, importantly, you know, a culture ideal of what it takes to win at a championship level at these big-time programs. But they were also valuable skill sets at positions that Texas, because they recruited for Todd Orlando's defense for several years, just didn't have a lot of bodies at who were ready to go. So that's where they provide a lot of their importance.
Well, yeah. What do you think the ceiling is, or maybe the realistic ceiling for this Texas defense? Like, can they be a top 20 defense? Can they be a top 25 defense? Are those expectations too high? Like, this defensive line is loaded. The back end is loaded with experience. And it feels like you've got some decent depth across the board there. Some questions at linebacker without a doubt. But like, do you think PK can work his magic and make this a really, really good defense in year one?
So I'm looking up, let's see if I can get there in time, defensive SP plus from a couple of years ago. And it's kind of slow. I'm looking up the SP plus for both Charlie Strong in his first year and then also Todd Orlando in his first year. And it's not being super cooperative. But I think those were both, you know, some of the better defensive units. Both, I think, were in the top 20, which for playing Big 12 teams that include Baker Mayfield and some of those elite, most high-flying Baylor offense that we've ever seen, those are pretty good numbers. Will they be top 20? I think they should be. I really do with the talent they have both up front and in the defensive backfield. I think that they, honestly, it's kind of strange saying it, knowing what Steve Sarkisian's background is, but I think the defense is going to be the unit that leads the way for this team this year. I not to say that the offense is going to struggle like it did under Sean Watson or under Tim Beck in those first years with a lot of other extenuating circumstances. But I think this defense is – I think there's a reason why it outperformed the offense for a significant portion of fall camp. And I think other teams are – luckily for Texas fans, other teams are about to start experiencing that. So, You know, I total defense is always a little bit of a misleading stat, but I think the metrics are going to like this defense over the course of the season.
Man, I was having a really good time until you brought up Sean Watson and Tim Beck. Hmm. I was having fun on this pod. I was having a good week, and then you just brought up those two guys, and it kind of brought me down. All right, I kind of like that prediction. Yeah, I think the potential is there for this to be a special group, and that's probably the safer bet. Just more experience, and it feels like more depth overall on defense than you have on offense right now. So I think more Longhorn fans would agree with you that the defense could and probably will be the strength of this team. Are we ready for Louisiana? Should we focus more on tomorrow's opponent?
Yeah, let's talk about the Ragin' Cajuns. So this is a team that in a pandemic season won 10 games. Everybody kind of knows about the time they went up to Ames, Iowa, and caught Matt Campbell for his what seems like his annual egg laying at the beginning of the year. But they became a pretty solid team over the course of the season. Now they were playing a Sun Belt schedule, and to be fair, they lost to the best Sun Belt team on their schedule. I think a close one to Coastal Carolina. But this was a team that throughout the course of the year just was able to be a lot more sound than their opponents. They didn't make mistakes. They could run the hell out of the football. And they pretty much have everybody back on both sides. And there's a few guys at several positions that may cause some problems for Texas, including at defensive tackle and maybe along the offensive line. But they're just a team that seems sound all over, and probably not what Steve Sarkisian wanted coming into his first game at Texas. I bet if he had it his way, he could have wished that he got the Owls first and then Arkansas and then the Ragin' Cajuns, but that's the way this is going. He's a little bit familiar with Billy Napier because they worked together on the Alabama staff for some time. I think in 2016 when one was wide receiver coach and Sarkisian was analyst. But overall, this is a team that it's well coached. It's, you know, to use another cliche, whole greater than the sum of its parts. But really, there's not a lot of places where Texas should feel fully threatened that they're at a disadvantage, especially now that there have been reports out of Lafayette that their starting left tackle may not be able to start. And also just considering the fact that a hurricane just went through South Louisiana.
Yeah, no, it's all good points, right? A lot of unforeseen factors and unexpected circumstances surrounding that Louisiana football program right now. They're loaded, man. And every Texas fan and their mother has heard this stat, but I'll give it to y'all again. Louisiana has more returning production than anybody in college football. And they've got 20 of their 22 starters back from last year from a team that went 10-1, as Joe just mentioned. They're good. And that wasn't a flash in the pan year. Like, they won 11 games in 2019. You know, it's one thing, like, Joe, I think last year, maybe 2 years ago, according to Phil Steele, Texas State had more returning production than anybody in college football. And some people were like, oh, they could be pretty good this year. Well, you know, experience doesn't mean a whole lot if your guys aren't that good.
Right.
Louisiana's players are good. And they're used to winning. Like, they're 21-4 for the last 2 years. And like, most of their starters this year were starters last year and were starters in 2019. So these guys like are not going to be phased or scared to come into Austin and play a team and a brand like Texas. Like, they've played some good teams on the road. They've beaten some good teams. Like, they're not going to be nervous to come into this atmosphere and play a team like the University of Texas. And Billy Napier turned down the Auburn job this offseason. Like, who does that? Who's coaching at a school like Louisiana, a school in the Sun Belt, and turns down a job in the SEC? Like, you only do that if you think you can get a better job. And I know that Billy Napier had September 4th, 2021 circled on his calendar when he turned down the Auburn job, because he's thinking, man, if I can go into Austin and beat Texas with a new head coach, shoot, I'm going to get a better job offer than Auburn. Everybody and their mother is going to want me. So he's super confident in his team, and he's super confident that they can come into Austin and win this game. To your point, though, Texas is better. Like, they have more talent. There's no doubt about that. They've got more depth. They've got more size in the trenches. Ideally, their skill position players are better. Like, there's no debating that stuff. But Louisiana is filled with guys who are good and who have played together for a long time. Texas does not have that. A lot of new faces and new places for this Texas team. So, look, I'm probably making it sound like I think Texas is going to win a football game. I don't. But I think this is going to be a tough test. I really do.
Yeah.
We want Sark to be Fred Akers, Joe. Not for a lot of reasons, but for the reason that every Texas coach since Fred Akers has started 1-2 or worse. So Texas ain't losing to Rice in week three, right? The two losses would be this weekend and next weekend. Fred Akers, the last Texas coach to start better than 1-2. You would love Sark to join Akers in that conversation. But, yeah, Louisiana will be a very, very tough test, and I agree with you 100%. In a perfect world, you'd have the Owls this week, and you'd get a couple of weeks to kind of ramp up for a really, really good Raging Cajuns team.
Yeah, like Fred Akers, Sarkisian's got a pretty good running back at his disposal to start his career. You know, it's kind of interesting. You brought up probably what's going through the mind of Billy Napier. And I'm kind of wondering, you know, if this is a game that he thinks, well, this game, like you mentioned, will be the one that gets him a better job. Because think back for a minute. It was, what, 2016? The 2015 Houston Cougars went, you know, did what they did, 13-1, I believe, and top Florida State in the bowl game. And then they show up and play Oklahoma in the first game of the year in 2016 and just beat the dog out. Just take over and beat them just into the ground in Houston. And I think that game, no matter what happened the rest of the season, because we definitely know what happened the rest of the season with the Houston Cougars, that game accomplished what it needed to accomplish for Tom Herman as it pertained to getting a better job. Mm-hmm. This is probably a similar situation for Billy Napier. He could go, what, 8-3 the rest of the way. But if he tops Texas, he's going to be known as that coach that has won, you know, 30-something games in 3 years at Louisiana Lafayette and also beat Texas in game one. So this is big for him. But kind of going into those individual matchups, basically they've got a defensive line that has a really good player, kind of like their own Keandre Coburn. Outside of that, it's just experienced guys. It's not anybody who's going to just make you think that, oh, this guy's going to the NFL. Maybe they will, and maybe that's, you know, a little bit of blind spot to my research. But there's no fear. There's no defender to really fear on this team. It's just the whole of the whole being greater than the sum of the parts that makes you a little bit concerned. And I get, especially going against this Texas offense.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. They've got one really talented safety. Braylon Trahan is their, I think, best defensive player. That's a guy who could be sort of a game breaker tomorrow for Louisiana. But they've got every starter back on that side of the ball. They're pretty good on the defensive line. They've got some depth there. So this will be a decent test for the Texas offensive line, right? Like, is Texas going to face more talented defensive lines? Yes. Are they going to face more talented players on defensive lines the rest of the way? Yes. But Louisiana's got a solid group. And I think if Texas struggles up front tomorrow, then you're going to be pretty nervous about what they could look like the rest of the way. So usually in games like this, Joe, the difference comes in the trenches. You brought it up earlier, right? Winning the trenches, that's what Sark talked about. That matters in every football game. Usually when it's like Power 5 versus G5, that's kind of the most noticeable thing, is that there's just a size difference and a strength difference on the lines of scrimmage. Hopefully we see that in Texas's favor tomorrow. If we do, I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah, and one thing that I keep coming back to with this Louisiana team is, like I mentioned, I think their offense has a lot of that Tom Herman to it, that power spread a little bit. I don't see a running back that I fear on that team.
Yeah.
There's an A&M transfer. There's a few guys from Louisiana, but there's no guy who is at maybe Keish or Rashawn Johnson level or Keelan Robinson level. There's no one that I look at and be like, you have to stop him. It's just a well-built team. And that's why I think that Texas is going to be a good test for that defense, but I don't see it being a huge problem. Now we got to make sure that it's we'll be watching and not seeing for any, you know, tragic flaws. Cause I remember watching that. What was it? It was either Tulsa or Louisiana Tech a couple of years ago, probably Louisiana Tech, where it seemed like the flats were open every single play. Every single play, the flat was open. I was taught Orlando's last year, and we knew that there were some systemic problems with that defense, just in the full-on design of it. So hopefully we don't see anything like that. But as far as like individual players, there's nobody really that I'm looking out for or fearful of from this Louisiana offense.
Yeah, they lost their two top running backs from last year's team, right? We keep mentioning 20 of 22 starters back. Well, they're having to replace their two best tailbacks from a year ago, so that's advantage Texas there. They do a lot of pre-snap motion. They run a lot of pistol. You don't see a ton of pistol in today's football, but you'll see a lot of that tomorrow. Look,
Levi, I see it from the horns. Right? Probably get them out.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Levi Lewis, multi-year starter there. People have called him Kyler Murray light, which, I mean, very, very light in my opinion, but he can beat you with his legs. He is a legit dual threat. Now, is he as fast as Kyler Murray? No. Is his arm as good as Kyler Murray? Not even close, but you know, he's a guy who's won a lot of games and played in a lot of important games during his college career. So he's, you know, he's the bus driver. He's sort of the team leader there. But yeah. I don't think they have any like first round talent on that team. You know, sometimes you see a first round caliber guy on a team like that. I don't think they have anybody like that. So we'll see, man. And the way they beat Iowa State last year, they killed Iowa State and Ames. They had a couple of non-offensive touchdowns and their return game was ridiculously good. So hopefully Texas has those details buttoned up, right? Hopefully Texas can protect the ball and hopefully we don't see any special teams miscues like we've seen at times in the past. Cause that was kind of the recipe for the Cajuns against Iowa State last year. If Texas looks pretty buttoned up and doesn't have those self-inflicted wounds, then I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the mystique from that season opening win last year, a lot of what's lost is it was built based on Cyclone mistakes. Like I said, it's the annual egg laying for Matt Campbell earlier in the year. And that's what it was. It was special teams. It was turnovers. It was places that you're hoping that with this coaching change, Texas has shored up and made sure that it won't be a big issue for the Horns this year. Anything else on Louisiana? I'm trying to see, you know, any other area. I think we kind of talked about both sides of the ball. We talked about their star players. You ready to put a number to it?
Let's do it.
So we over at Inside Texas made plenty of predictions. I've got my season prediction at 9-3, and I do not think this game is going to be one of those three. I think this is going to be a pretty comfortable win. I put the Horns down for 35-17, which is both a cover. It's a comfortable win. I think the days of looking for, you know, 50-12 wins, at least in year one and at least against quality G5 opponents, this isn't a team that's going to be able to do that, this Longhorn team. But I think it's going to look – but by the end of the game, I think people will be able to walk away and say that, you know what, maybe Louisiana held their own, but Texas started to pull away. And that's kind of what I see in this game, and that's why I'm going 35-17 with the Horns.
Wow. Yeah, you're a little bit more confident than I am. I've got Texas winning this game tomorrow, but I have Louisiana covering. I'm at 31-26 right now. Kind of a weird number for Louisiana, but something tells me it's going to be a weird number for Louisiana tomorrow. So
that means it's a lot of field goals, though.
Yeah, I guess
a lot of field goals.
Hopefully not a safety, right? That would be disappointing. I'd prefer a lot of field goals than a dumb safety that Texas has to take. But yeah, look, I think this is going to be close. I think it's going to be tough and tight. I think Louisiana's a hell of a football team. Obviously, I hope you're right. I hope it's a comfortable victory and a stress-free victory because we have not had a lot of those as fans of this team over the last decade. But I don't think it's going to be that way. So I think the good guys win. And look, we'll nitpick, of course, next time we do this podcast, regardless of what happens tomorrow. But Louisiana's a good enough football team to where you just take a win. You just take a win against these guys. And it might not be pretty, but you just want to go – sorry to go Tom Herman here, but you just want to go 1-0 because I think this is far and away the best team in your non-conference slate. I think this is the best team you're going to play until you play Oklahoma in October. So just find a way to get this one done, regardless of how it looks, and I'll be happy.
All right, so that's two wins there. Let's go to the good old lock of the week, which last week was good for you.
What happened?
Was good for you and bad for me. I even thought so. I think I went 0-2 last week. I looked at you picking Illinois +7, and I thought, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't know. I think Nebraska covers 7 pretty easily. Stupid me for believing in Scott Frost. Mm. And then I also put belief in Todd Graham that he and the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors would get inside 18 against UCLA in front of 18 people. And unfortunately, they did not. So you started off 1-0 with your locks of the week. I started off 0-1, arguably 0-2. So I'll let you lead off. Who do you have this week as your lock of the week?
You know, I don't think anybody cares about people's bets that much if they're not their own. But I have yet to lose a college football bet, Joe. I had a good night last night. I had Bowling Green +37 against Tennessee. I had Coastal Carolina first half against whoever the Citadel or whoever they were playing. We're rolling right now. We're off to a pretty good start with the cousin. You know, I wish I spent more time on this beforehand. I'm going to go with Cincinnati tomorrow. I'm a believer in Cincinnati, and they know how important style points are for them to make the playoff this year. It's ridiculous. I hate the 14 playoff for a lot of reasons, but like Cincinnati can go undefeated and still maybe not make the playoff, which is frustrating as hell. So a team like that, a G5 team, needs style points. They've got Miami of Ohio tomorrow. Cincinnati's a 23-point favorite. I think Cincinnati's going to do whatever they can over the first couple of weeks before they play Indiana on the road, which is obviously a resume-boosting type of win. I think they send a message to college football tomorrow and blast Miami of Ohio. So kind of random there, kind of off the beaten path, but I will go with the Bearcats to cover against the Red Hawks and Ben Roethlisberger in Miami of Ohio.
So what was the number on Cincinnati?
I've got 23 right now.
23. All righty. I like that one. I don't believe in – I think Cincinnati slips up this year, but I don't think they're going to slip up against the Red Hawks. I'm going to go with K-State -3 against Stanford in a neutral site game. And I think – here's the thing. I don't believe much in Stanford. David Shaw is getting paid $8 million, what I'm not sure for. Especially over these past couple of years. If Texas fans may remember this name, Tanner McKee, I believe he's the guy who's going to be their starting quarterback after returning from his Mormon mission either before last year or before this year. So they've got some, you know, there's always kids who go to Stanford because it's Stanford. And they're always going to get, you know, a good baseline level of talent, kind of, sort of, but I don't know if they have that this year, and I just don't believe in, you know, what they do as a play calling offense with the level of talent they have. Thing is, also with Kansas State, you got Deuce Vaughn. You also got Skylar Thompson coming back, and that's something I'm not sure. I'm sure the odds makers have taken that into account, but also some of those numbers from last year. I think that Texas game where they just beat the dog out of Kansas State looks a lot different with Skylar Thompson playing, because their passing offense was non-existent without him there. So give me the Wildcats -3 in Jerry World against the Cardinal. That's my lock of the week. And hopefully I get into some winning ways. I think I picked last night correctly. I picked App State -9 versus East Carolina. I pushed pushed the Minnesota Ohio State game, and now I'm looking for some more. I've got a couple bold picks this week. I did do Georgia +3 and LSU -3 and Miami covering 19.5. So we'll see what happens this upcoming week. But a pretty good opening weekend for college football. Looking forward to it.
No doubt. Is Stanford K-State really at Jerry World?
I believe so. Let me look at Kansas. That's what I got my computer in front of me for.
Yeah, I don't say that to doubt you. I just, like, has Jerry World fallen off? Like, that's the biggest game they could get? on week one of the college football season?
AT&T Stadium. Tickets as low as $5.
No one's going to be – that's – okay. That's
you,
random.
You can sit 50-yard line for $120 in the lower level.
Golly, not worth
it. You can sit in the club on the 50-yard or on the 30-yard line for $60.
Jesus. Yeah, that's a random game. That will not be close to full tomorrow.
Yeah, if you want to pay $5 to go watch it on the big screen, plenty of tickets are available.
That is funny. All right, well, I think that's it for this week's episode. Good stuff, Joe. And make sure y'all follow Joe on Twitter at JosephCook89. Check out the great work that he does over at InsideTexas.com. Definitely subscribe over there if you haven't yet. And, of course, subscribe to this podcast, too. And also follow me on Twitter at Brad Kellner and listen to The Wheelhouse on ESPN 97.5 in Houston, weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. You can listen online at ESPN975.com. Thanks again to our sponsors, Audiovisual Consultations and Altstadt Beer. And thanks again to you guys for the continued support. We really do appreciate you guys tuning in each and every week. We'll be back next week to recap the Louisiana game and, of course, preview the old.